Chapter 3, Renunciation and Baptism. My mind and spirit were becoming more and more detached. I was fed up of serving British imperialism. Many attempts were made and various methods were employed to persuade me to take up government service, but they failed to entangle me once again. One day, Father somehow brought me in the presence of the Deputy Commissioner and Dr. Fisher, and both started persuading me to accept some government post. At first, I kept silence. Then they pointedly asked me why I hesitated to accept government service. I replied, "I at first joined government service with the sole aim of serving humanity. I believed that to serve humanity is to serve God. I also believed that it was not possible to serve humanity individually. I innocently joined this special welfare organization of the government, which was set up for the main purpose of serving the poor and diseased. I became a staff member of this welfare organization to serve humanity through the government. I thought this social service would be the most spiritually rewarding, but I have had bitter experience, which has convinced me that the whole government is corrupt. Even the highest officials who claim to be the servants of government and the people actually do not serve anyone. One is a greater swindler than the other, so I have given up the idea of taking up such a misleading service. Secondly, I could continue to serve as the Ciudad and equip myself well in it only if I could do justice. While one is in the government service, one cannot respect truth and do justice in the true sense of the word. It is possible only to do moral justice, only if everyone connected with this dispensing justice is virtuous and righteous in the religious sense. Thirdly, as long as the law of evidence, which was based generally on false evidence, is in practice, there could be no justice. I do not know when, and under what circumstances, was this law of evidence introduced, but I have no doubt that when it was first introduced, people must be in the habit of telling the truth on oath, and the character of the people must be generally high. But nowadays, falsehood alone prevails, and only few people tell the truth. There are some people who have made giving false evidence a profession, and judgments are based on the basis of these false evidences in most of the civil and criminal cases. Every village has such professional witnesses who gave false evidence on payment. You can study the records of all cases for the last 12 years, and you will find that the same false witnesses appear in many cases from each village, and on the basis of such false evidence, judgments have been passed. I have with me a list of such professional witnesses. The same men appear as witnesses in the courts of EAC, 3rd grade, 2nd grade, and 1st grade magistrates. The same men give evidence in the courts of district and sessions judges. If you doubt, you can check it up from the files of various cases. What is on record requires no other proof. Giving false evidence is the profession of these people, and they do so for a few annas or a few rupees. For such paltry sums, they tell white lies. Their conscience is dead. How can they have any respect for telling the truth? It is on the basis of such witnesses that the judges pass judgments. Do you think that they do justice? Can they under any circumstances really do any justice? For any God-fearing judge wishes to know the truth, he may go for an on-the-spot investigation. Supposing a murder has taken place in a village, and I go to the place for an on-the-spot investigation, as a result of which I come to know who the real murderer. But to convict the murderer, we require at least two witnesses. If we do not get two witnesses and the judgment is given on the basis of first personal investigation, the higher court will set aside the judgment. On the other hand, sometimes two witnesses are procured against an innocent man and he is sentenced to death by the lower court. Such a judgment is considered sound and valid and upheld even by the higher courts. This means that on-the-spot investigation is of no use. All judgments passed on the basis of on-the-spot investigation but without witnesses can be set aside by the higher courts. Not only that, the judges of the high court may consider me to be incompetent and it may even downgrade me. For fear of being downgraded, I will have to give up the path of righteousness and keep my position. I will have to give up real justice and base my judgment on false witnesses. This means I will not be able to do justice, and I will join these corrupt officers of the government who swindle the people. Thus I will lose my character and spiritual future. What will I get except ultimately repent over my deeds? The Guru says, "Never do such deeds, over which you have to repent ultimately," says Guru Ram Amar Das. So I do not want to take up such services over which I have to repent. Your police officers of the Secret Service, the CID, indulge in falsehood and lies. They give threats and use underhand means to get false confessions, the same as the case was with a pleader and lawyer, who accept cases only for the sake of money, even when they know that a man is a criminal and the case is false. They try to prove it otherwise through false witnesses. Thus an innocent person sometimes gets a death sentence while the real criminal escapes. All that a man has to do is spend money on bribes. Real justice can be done only by those who have some respect for moral and religious principles. Except men of high integrity and virtuous and spiritual life, no one else can boast of doing real justice. But in our government offices and courts, all the officers from top to bottom are corrupt. Where the whole machinery is like that, what can a lone religious man, having respect for moral and spiritual principles, do? For a person like me, it is not possible at all to work in such an atmosphere. I have yet to begin my journey on the spiritual path, and I should not begin in a manner in which I may lose all the precious things God has given me. So you cannot expect me to continue in work in which I am the loser. On hearing this reply, the deputy commissioner and Dr. Fisher said to my father, "Sardar Sahib, we are sorry that your son is neither any use to us nor you. Not only are we losing him, but even you will lose him. It is a very sad thing that a golden sparrow is slipping out of the hands of the British government. It is also very sad that your wishes have not been fulfilled, and we also have been very much disappointed, because neither can the law of evidence can be done away with, nor will he accept a government service. This is the brief story of how I renounced a government service and decided never to go for it again." Although Father was greatly disappointed, he was never angry with me, nor did he ever express his displeasure with me, because he knew about my mental and spiritual condition, and he knew I was becoming detached from worldly interest for the sake of a higher spiritual life. Secondly, I was always obedient and tried to serve him as a dutiful son. Because of my filial piety, he always tenderly loved me. He was, however, sometimes seriously disappointed when he found that his son would not be able to achieve a very high position in the government. For this purpose, he had spent thousands of rupees on my education and training. Many times he would call me close to him and try to affectionately persuade me to accept some government service, but it was all in vain. He had great respect for my religious life. This I came to know after an interesting incident which is given below. Even before I was baptized, I had deep faith in the principles of Sikhism and the Holy Word. One of my beliefs was that the divine name is the panacea of all ills. Prayers and contemplation of the divine name can heal mental and physical ailments, and this is the best medicine for all types of maladies. There was frequent discussion with Father on this topic. Father did not want me to avoid medicines when I fell ill. He did not believe that there is such type thing as a healing of physical ailment through prayer or contemplation of the divine name. He, however, believed that mental diseases can be cured through prayer. As for physical ailment, he considered ordinary medicines to be absolutely essential. He did not understand the mystery of the power of the divine name, nor did he believe in it. Once it so happened that he fell ill, he was seriously ill, that he had to be taken to Ludhiana Hospital. I was tending him in the hospital. There were one or two servants and some relatives and friends to help us. We had acquired a special room in the hospital, and the treatment started. I was not in favor of bringing him to the hospital, but my relatives and other friends almost compelled me to bring him here. Anyway, I wanted to nurse my father and serve him with my own hands, so I accompanied him. Father was also very anxious that I should accompany him. The treatment went on for about a week, but he still continued to have a fever, and there was not the slightest change in his condition. Malaria was raging in the town those days, and I had to go to a city number of times. One after another, all the relatives suffered from an attack of malaria and had to go home. Within a week, I was the only person left to attend Father. Some more servants were sent to help, but whoever came suffered with a severe attack of malaria and had to leave the place. Then I acquired an old servant, Kardku, from my relative Sardar Uttam Singh, pleader, who was leading staying in Jalandhar. He also fell ill with an attack of malaria and had to go back. I was felt all alone to look after my father. My father's condition was taking a serious turn. One difficulty I faced was that I could not decide whether to stay near father or to bring things for him from the city during the daytime. I had to go many times to the house of Dr. Fateh Chand, the civil surgeon, who was residing in the city because he came to the hospital for a round only once or twice. Father was under the special treatment of this doctor. No doubt, there was the assistant surgeon and other junior doctors in charge of the hospital, and there was also the hospital assistant who gave him medicines regularly and kept him under constant vigilance. The civil surgeon has asked me to report father's condition every 3 hours, so I had to run all about alone in this burning heat of the noonday sun during the month of August. Ultimately, I also got fever. For about 2 or 3 days, I did not care much about it. I was moving about when I had only slight temperature. On the 5th day, my body began to shiver, and my temperature rose very high. I had only to confine myself to bed. The assistant surgeon offered me some medicines, telling me in so many words that my life was in danger, and persuaded me to take those regularly. The civil surgeon and other prominent doctors of the city also told me that the condition of my father was very serious, and he may hardly survive for 24 hours. His condition had deteriorated, and there was no cure for him. All medicines had failed to bring down his fever, so they asked me to take some medicines and get cured, so that I may not miss the opportunity to look after my father during these last moments. I was the only person left near him. All others had fallen ill and gone back. Now that I was down with fever, I must take medicines and get cured. This would give me an opportunity to serve my father during these last moments. Otherwise, I might have to repent all my life for missing this opportunity. I had come there with the sole purpose of nursing him, and I had looked after him with great devotion and care, but if I failed to nurse him during the last moments, all my service would go in vain. Persuading me by these strong words, they asked me to take medicines. I told them that their medicines had not been able to cure my father, even after treatment for many weeks. Their medicines had not cured any of those servants and relatives who had become victim of malaria fever and had to go home. How could this medicine cure me, I asked. I asked them not to worry about me, as I had my own medicines. Do not annoy me any more, I said, as I am not going to take any of your medicines. On hearing this plain reply, the assistant surgeon became very angry. He left 2 powders on a small table near my bed. He ordered me in a very strong word to take them immediately. He said he would come back after an hour again. It would be better, he said, if you take those powders before I come, otherwise we will throw you and your dying father out of the hospital. His threats did not have the slightest effect on me. I gathered strength and went near father, who was on the other side of the room at a distance of 10 yards. He was lying unconscious. His pulse was very slow and about to fail. His hands and feet were cold. His nose was slightly twisted. There was a rattling sound in his throat. He could neither hear nor see for the last 2 days. For about 3 days he was unable to pass urine, although the catheter was passed and some injections were given. The previous evening the civil surgeon and other doctors had declared his condition very serious. His urine had now become poisoned and affected the whole body. There was no hope of his survival. The doctors had advised that early next morning I should send a telegram to my village home, but as I was seriously ill and confined to bed, I could neither send a telegram nor any message. A voice said within me that the divine name is a panacea of all ills. This gave me a little hope. My faith was awakened. When I was now disappointed from every side, I concentrated deeply in this inner voice, which was my only hope. I wrapped myself in a blanket, and in a state of mental concentration, I silently said my invocation, my prayer, and then recited Japji. The spiritual mystery of this divine name had not been revealed to me. I silently recited Japji. I was adept in silent meditation and recitation. I recited the Japji 5 times. Then my mind was concentrated on the verses of spiritual communion. A voice said within me that the divine name is a panacea of all ills. This gave me a little hope. My faith was awakened. When I was Now disappointed from every side, I concentrated deeply on this inner voice, which was my only hope. I wrapped myself in a blanket, and in a state of mental concentration, I silently said with my invocation the prayer, and recited the Japji. To me, at the time, when I was unbaptized, the Japji was the only divine name. The spiritual mystery of the divine name had not been revealed to me. I silently recited the Japji. By now, I was adept in silent meditation and recitation. I recited the Japji 5 times. Then my mind was concentrated on the verses of spiritual communion. I continued to repeat these verses and could not go beyond them. My body was sweating, my fever had come down to normal, and I was feeling light and healthy. I wiped off the sweat and went near Father to see his condition. I thought he must be dead by now. When I went near him, I was delighted to see that he had passed urine and his pulse was better. He was also breathing clearly. His body was also sweating, although he did not have a cotton sheet over his body. I was extremely happy to see him recovering. When I called him, he opened his eyes and spoke as if he had come out of his samadhi. He said, "Son, somebody is reciting the communion verses, Manne Ki Pauri of Japji. I feel deeply elevated in spiritual bliss." After saying these words, he became silent again. I was astonished to hear this. I thanked God from the depth of my heart for saving Father. As I was sitting near my father, the assistant surgeon came, and finding me normal again, "Well done, you're a good boy. So at last you took the medicine. That is why your fever is gone." I told him that his powders were lying there where he left them, and he could take them back. He was surprised and annoyed to find that the powders were still there. He felt my pulse and asked me in astonishment, "How did your fever go?" I asked him to see the condition of my father also. When he looked at Father and found him quite well, he was dumbfounded. He stood there like a statue and asked my father, "What is this miracle that has suddenly cured you?" My father said, "It is a miracle of the communion of the verses of Japji, Manne Ki Pauri." And then he closed his eyes and remained silent. The doctor again questioned him, but my father said, "Do not disturb my mind, which is deeply absorbed in the musical communion verses. The music of the communion verses, Manne Ki Pauri, is still ringing in my ears." I then said to the doctor, "The divine name is a panacea of all ills. This is a miracle and great wonder of wonders. You all gave up Father as dead, and his disease is incurable. Contrary to it, the great God has worked a wonderful miracle." The doctor went out from the hospital, and riding a bicycle, he immediately went to the civil surgeon and told him, boastfully, that by some special treatment he had cured my father. The civil surgeon was also surprised as to how a patient who could not pass urine for 3 or 4 days, had a temperature of about 106 degrees, could be cured. The assistant surgeon boasted that he had cured him. They came there discussing the case while my father was still deeply absorbed in the music of communion verses, and I stood in a thanksgiving prayer before my God. Within another 2 or 3 days, my father was absolutely normal, and he was brought home. From that day onward, I had a profound and deep faith in the spiritual healing power of prayer and divine name. My faith in the high principles of Sikhism became deeper and sublimer after this incident. No one now prevented me from taking religious life seriously. I had already renounced the government service and felt revived. I was now prepared for baptism. Before the auspicious day came, a blissful incident took place. It was the annual function of Gujarwal Singh Sabha. A large sangat had gathered together. Musicians from Amritsar were singing Asa Diwar. Suddenly I passed into deep samadhi and blissful state. For the first time in my life, the sad sangat now appeared to be heaven on earth. All round, I felt the rain of nectar, laved joy, which was sweet and thrilling. The whole sky was filled with waves of ambrosia. I felt that I emerged and bathed in a sea of nectar. Inside and outside my body, I felt heavenly bliss. This experience gave me an unusual spiritual joy, in which my mind and soul were diving as if in a sea of joy. For a moment, I felt that I was not sitting in this world. There were the Panchpyare, the 5 beloved knights, who baptized. One of the Panchpyaras came towards me from behind. It appeared he was descending from the heavenly realm of truth, only to take me along with him. As I sat deeply absorbed in Samadhi, Kirtan was going on in front of me, while the same beloved one, out of the five Pyaras, was coming towards me in a lovelorn mood from behind. The music of the high spiritual realm was ringing all around, and he moved in a tune with this music. It appeared that I had two eyes even at my back, because without turning back, I could see that what was happening behind me. All those things appeared to be happening in the astral sphere. The heavenly messenger, one of the Panchpyaras, was now seen coming close to me. He silently came and stood behind me and touched me with his magnetic astral finger. With a strange power, he held me by my hand and took me in the direction from which he came. He did not utter a word, nor could I speak. Although I did not like to leave the Kirtan which was going on there, yet I followed him irresistibly in a great joy and expectation. I thought, he will take me to the heavenly realms from where he came. In deep contemplative silence, I followed the beloved figure, who appeared to be an embodiment of love. I did not even feel the movement of my feet. In an instant, I was taken to a strange spiritual realm, where there was untold peace and bliss. The holy Guru Granth was placed there, and over it was a canopy. Someone was waving the chauri reverently. The Panchpyaras of the Guru stood there with humility and reverence before Guru Granth Sahib. This celestial figure, who took me here, bowed before Guru Granth Sahib with such deep reverence as I had never witnessed before. I also bowed with the same reverence and humility. I was so deeply absorbed in the humble salutation that the celestial figure bestowed benediction on me and asked me to rise up. What I now saw was that a Sikh was waving the chauri, and five Sikhs stood there ready to perform the baptism ceremony. I was not able to speak, but it appeared I was silently trying to tell them in these words, "Sir, if you find that I am fit for baptism, may I please be baptized now. I am yearning for baptism. There cannot be a better occasion than this. I would feel greatly blessed." Then one of them said, "If you wish to be baptized, bring your wife also with you." When these words came to my ears, I suddenly came out of the spiritual mood of ecstasy. The whole celestial atmosphere disappeared, as if a screen had suddenly dropped over it. I found myself again in the Singh Sabha Gurdwara Gujranwal. Five Sikhs were standing in the presence of Guru Granth Sahib, and amongst them was the same mysterious figure who had taken me to a high spiritual realm. Now, when I looked at him closely, I found him to be a friend and brother disciple. I now realized I had seen all the Panchpyaras in their astral body, but now I could see them in their physical body also. I said to them, "It was better if they could baptize me all alone." They smiled and uttered this couplet: "By thy grace, O merciful Lord, the whole family has boarded the ship and has been baptized." Thus they instructed me to bring my wife and have her baptized along with me, and not leave her behind on the spiritual path. They said many other things which I do not remember. I humbly promised and asked them if I could again get such a wonderful opportunity for being baptized. They said in words full of blessing, "You will get a far better opportunity." This blessing encouraged me, and I started waiting patiently for the day. For many years I had been preparing as a novice for baptism with a deep devotion and longing. Now I felt that I was a suitable candidate for baptism. In the beginning, I was of the opinion that the Panchpyaras should be of my choice, but this was an error and a mistake. Such a doubt had already been dispelled. The Sadsangat, or the Khalsa Panth alone, had the right to select the Panchpyaras, and not those who seek baptism. Those who seek baptism are only novices, and it is not possible for them to make a judgment or to test the Panchpyaras. If at all they make a judgment or apply some test, it would be of a low order. But the spiritual experience which I had on this day convinced me that if a seeker after baptism is sincere and pure, he will get the Panchpyaras of the spiritual order he deserves. It so happens that the seeker's own virtues and qualities bear proper fruit. Nothing is achieved in shrewdness and ingenuity. So I left everything in the hands of the Almighty God and was waiting for the great day according to His sweet will. I had completely neglected my wife in this direction. Of course, I had found out that she would agree to everything I suggested, and she was undoubtedly very loyal, devoted, and faithful. I did not have to take much trouble in persuading her to follow me on the spiritual path. On seeing my religious trend of mind, she tried to mold herself accordingly. I did not have to compel her to accept everything I did. She agreed to follow the same strict code of conduct which I followed. She had been deeply influenced by spiritual association of a young lady, Bibi Jagat Prakash Kaur. She was related to my wife and was her playmate during childhood. She spent most of her life with her. I have never seen so deeply religious a young lady before. She was profoundly enlightened and was thoroughly grounded in the noble Sikh ideals. She had such a good religious education that I had not seen so far anyone with so profound knowledge of Sikhism. There is so much to be written about her that one can write a whole book, but unfortunately, I did not get an opportunity to write her life story. This saintly lady departed from this world at quite an early age, but even in her young age, the few years of life she lived revealed a wonderful passion for Sikh ideals and devotion to the Guru. The Guru had sent her, and the Guru took her back. My wife was deeply influenced by the spiritual association of this noble and angelic soul. She imbibed many spiritual virtues at a very young age, so when my wife met me, she readily agreed to lead exactly the same kind of orthodox life which I was leading, and she also prepared herself for the baptism, just as I had wanted her to do. She was sincerely anxious to be baptized along with me, but I was so deeply absorbed in my inner life and devotion to God that I hardly thought of her. At last, the day of my baptism came near. For me, it was to be a new spiritual birth and a new life. I was to die to this world and was to be born again in the spirit of the Guru. Unexpectedly, the day was made known to me, for which I had been waiting impatiently, like a honeybee thirsting for the beauty of the flower. I expected that day to be known at any time suddenly, when I would get the heavenly nectar as a gift from God. At last, one day, I felt a divine call when I came to know that at Bakapur in Tehsil Filor, district Jalandhar, a unique religious gathering was being organized and an impressive baptism ceremony was to be held. This was specially organized to baptize the Muslim divine Maulvi Kareem Bakhsh along with his family into the Khalsa faith. After the baptism, he came to be known as Sant Lakhbir Singh. Whenever I came to know of any religious gathering, I eagerly went there to enjoy the spiritual bliss of the holy congregation. Now, when I came to know that there would be an Amrit Prachar, a baptism ceremony, I at once went there. Many other friends from our village joined me. On the way, other jathas joined us. When we got to Filora station, we started Kirtan and went on foot to Bakapur, singing divine songs all along the way, at a distance of 3 miles. It was a large gathering of the Sikh community in which all prominent leaders, saints, and devotees had gathered together. It was in every way a grand Khalsa Divan, which I had witnessed for the first time in my life. It is not necessary to write much more about this gathering. I was full of hope and joy and was eagerly waiting for the baptism ceremony. When there was a call for those who wished to be baptized, some power moved me and I stood up with folded hands and begged the holy congregation to bless me with the ambrosial baptism of Amrit. If they found me suitable and deserving, I would feel blessed if along with others I was also baptized. By the grace of God, my request was accepted. Some more persons from our village got ready for Amrit. Then a good many more came forward. Out of them, only those who deserved and were prepared in every way for the Amrit were selected. They were asked to take a bath and wash their hair. Then they were brought before the Holy Guru Granth Sahib for the baptism ceremony. Before the ceremony started, a man came from outside and started telling us about the divine name. Because of this unceremonious method of imparting the divine name, its spiritual significance failed to be revealed to us. We did not experience the magnetism of the divine name. Thus, the divine name failed to spiritually inspire me. Its contemplation also was difficult without the proper inspiration from the Panchpyara. But there was no doubt I experienced a distinct change and spiritual rebirth from my inner being, and truly felt a new life, a new youth, a new spiritual vision of life. The Panchpyaras then instructed us with the essential code of conduct, which they commanded us to practice even at the cost of life. To me, these ethical commands and principles of Sikh idealism appear to be personal commands of Guru Gobind Singh, which have been imparted from heart to heart and soul to soul as perennial inspiration by the Khalsa for centuries. To live and practice these ethical commands to the letter became the sole aim of my religious and spiritual life. To me, to strictly adopt these principles of the Khalsa code of conduct was the only path of liberation. After acquiring this spiritual birth in the holy order of the Khalsa, I vowed to maintain the purity and sublimity of this miraculous spiritual birth. When I came home after baptism, everybody felt that there was a distinct change in me, and everyone was surprised at that change. The rest of my family had not yet entered the spiritual life of the Khalsa holy order. I made up my mind not to take any food from the hands of those who had not been baptized. My wife had gone to her paternal home, so she failed to join me in baptism. Arrangements for her baptism had to be made only when she came. I could not ask my father and mother to go in for baptism, so I started cooking my own food. All my life, I had never cooked any food. When everyone saw me taking such keen interest and having such orthodox attitudes towards spiritual life, my parents and other members of the family felt naturally inclined to be baptized, partly through personal attachment and partly through the new inspiration. So within a month, all members of the family, including my wife, who had come back from her parents' home, were baptized. Earlier, our marriage ceremony had been performed according to Vedic rites. Now we were remarried according to Sikh rites after baptism. The whole family had now been reformed according to Sikh ideals, and everyone started leading a religious life. It was a spiritually detached householder's life, in which we all enjoyed both the bliss of divine union and the joys of earthly life. We spent most of the time in association with her holy people. We had our own Kirtan Jatha. Many families now accepted baptism, but very few adopted the orthodox way of the Vedic ideal, the Puritan ideal. We went from village to village performing Kirtan and preaching faith, and we also went to a large religious gathering. We had our own Kirtan Jatha. Many families now accepted baptism, but very few adopted the orthodox way of the Vedic ideal. We went from village to village performing Kirtan and preaching faith, and we also went to large religious gatherings. Everywhere we tried to enjoy the divine Kirtan. Wherever food in the Guru's kitchen, the langar was prepared by unbaptized people there. Our Jatha cooked our own food and spent most of the time listening to the divine Kirtan. Many religious gatherings were held in our village home at Narangwal. Many people were baptized, though few lived an ideal life. Wherever there was religious gatherings, we received an invitation. As far as I know, we did not miss any of the holy gatherings during those days. Sometimes we walked about from 20 to 30 miles to reach such holy gatherings. It is a very long story. If you want some details of this period, you can ask a number of other friends. In a very few words, I may say that this period passed in a blissful association with religious people till the time came when I had to go to Abbottabad.